Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. There's been some controversy surrounding the Hope House homeless shelter and its formation and what effect it might have on the local area. I have the director of the shelter online with me right now, John Niemela, to ask for his response to some of those issues. Let's just start with, did you guys have a meeting yesterday?
Yes, we did, last night.
Okay, just so I'm up to date, what was the result of that meeting?
Well, the members that met were fully supportive of moving forward, that there still is a big need in the community. We're saddened by the departure of a couple of the other board members, and we wish them well. And we're doing everything we can to still try to hit our target date of November 1st for opening the shelter.
Now, there's been some negative press that's appeared in some of the TV outlets and in the newspaper, particularly with local law enforcement and also Mr. Jacobs, who you referenced as one of the people that left. The concerns raised is, one, there's some doubt being cast on the number of people listed as homeless. The number you've quoted before is 149 people. And then also the second issue seems to be whether or not having a homeless shelter would simply compound the problem. Do you have a response to those two allegations?
Yeah. The thing that's really important, and I know at one point I had provided you with the data that I've been using as a reference. That data sheet comes from directly from the numbers that HUD provides and the Michigan State Housing Development Authority. If you look at the top left hand corner of the form, they list that number of total homeless that are in Berrigo, Houghton, and Keweenaw County of 149. In the bottom right-hand corner of the first page, they actually break it down that there's 86 people that are actually homeless and 63 people that are imminent risk of being homeless. But yet, you know, when HUD reports those numbers, you know, that those two categories between actually homeless and at imminent risk of being homeless, they do count that as you know, total homeless, you know, in our area. You know, so those are numbers, you know, that come from HUD. Those are numbers that they refer to and rely on for providing the assistance, you know, for, you know, the continuum of care grants that are provided, you know, to our three counties that actually flow through the community action agency of Elgin Marquette, which actually administers the funds for the 10 central UP counties. So those are the actual numbers. The sad thing is, you know, with law enforcement saying that they don't see the numbers, you know, granted we don't have, like we've talked about before, we don't have the little tent villages, you know, where you see, you know, people, you know, that are homeless that are you know, lined up, you know, on a city street, you know, in their little tents or their makeshift shelters, or we don't see the people, you know, pushing around their shopping carts with their entire life savings in the shopping cart like you might see in the urban areas. But those are actually the numbers that are, you know, that we do have in Berrigo, Houghton, and Keweenaw County. And as far as, you know, serving the need, you know, one of the things that I have talked about quite frequently is that, you know, the shelters in the UP, you know, have stated that, you know, between 60, depending on, you know, the different shelters, between 65 and 85% of the people that are staying at, you know, the three shelters that are the three shelters, Marquette, Escanaba, and Iron Mountain, you know, 65 to 85% of the guests that are staying there are actually, you know, residents of their community. They're not people from out of the area, even though, you know, sometimes, you know, the law enforcement, you know, is, you know, trying to say that the majority of the people that are staying there from out of the area, you know, the people that are there are actually the residents of the community. So, and, you know, Marquette, I know, you know, from my conversations with Doug Russell, the executive director of Room at the Inn, you know, Marquette, you know, because it's a larger community, their total homeless numbers are about 500. They average, you know, anywhere from 16 to 18, as sometimes as many as 20 people in their shelter. You know, with our 149, we feel confident that, you know, that that we may have, you know, 6 to maybe 8 people, you know, so it's not like we're going to be having a large influx of people, you know, staying at the shelter, but, you know, we've analyzing the numbers, you know, the estimate, you know, might be, you know, 6 to 8, and especially when we first opened, it may be, you know, lower than that. I know when I was talking to Iron Mountain that just completed their first year, you know, they had a number of nights where they didn't have anybody staying at their shelter, and they averaged, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 in Iron Mountain through their season.
I know my first reaction when I was reading the article that appeared in the Daily Mining Gazette and some of the comments that were made and talking about how 15 to 35% was the, you know, sort of the window of people staying at the shelter who may not be local residents. And I thought, okay, well, out of 150, if you're talking about, you know, a dozen or so people that may not be from the local area, well, then what do you do? You know, how do you justify not having a homeless shelter to help the other 120 or so? And I likened it to, you know, if you have a food bank in the area, you may attract people from outside of the area who are hungry, who come here for food. Or if you have free drug addiction services, you might attract somebody who's in an area who doesn't have that service to come here to get it. And to say, to use that argument, well, we don't want those people coming to our area, so let's not provide help for our residents in order to keep those people out. I found that striking.
Well, and the other thing that you know, it's hard to understand, you know, when we have so many people claiming that the shelter, you know, is going to, the word of the shelter is going to draw people, the homeless people, to our community, you know, and, you know, when you think about it, you know, we average 183 inches of snow during the winter. If you or I were homeless, I know I wouldn't come to the frozen north to be homeless, to be able to sleep on a mattress on a floor in a church, because there's a mattress on a floor in a church, you know, to this kind of an area. So, you know, the concerns of the shelter bringing people in specifically because of the shelter just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, and in my conversations with the other shelters, you know, granted, there are people, you know, the people that they talk about that aren't local, you know, community residents, you know, have come to the area for a lot of different reasons. A boyfriend or girlfriend that comes, you know, that has a boyfriend or girlfriend in the area, they come, they're living together, something happens to the relationship, and the one is kicked out of the apartment or the house, and now they're homeless. Friend that says, hey, there's work up here, come on up, you know, from, you know, another area. They come up, you know, after a couple months of not finding work, and after the friend finally says, hey, you haven't been contributing to, you know, expenses here, I can't afford to be here, and now they find themselves, you know, without a place to stay, you know. So I just don't feel confident that, you know, that the shelter is going to be bringing people into the area just because of the fact that we have a shelter. They may be coming here for a myriad of other reasons and find themselves in that predicament, but at least for be able to help them, as well as, you know, the 65 to, you know, 85% of the local people that need help, you know, it only makes sense to be able to have a place for them to have a warm, safe place to stay, and then a hot, you know, home-cooked meal, you know, in the shelter in the evening, to be able to, you know, find that support, and then, you know, being able to work with them and, you know, make connections with the other organizations and agencies that do provide some services. But, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, I've tried to explain too. Even though there are the many different groups, but the ability to be able to get the services just aren't immediate. You know, there's sometimes that people will have to wait, you know, 90 days or more before a housing choice voucher is available. You know, once they apply through, you know, through MISHTA for that program, you know, some of the people won't qualify for some of the prevention assistance dollars that are there, because of the fact that, you know, they may not qualify because of income. I just had a couple that had contacted me through one of the veteran service officer in the area. The veteran is on disability. His wife works at Walmart. Due to medical expenses that have gotten high, they were facing eviction. But unfortunately, their income level was above the threshold that they were able to, you know, get access to the services. You know, so that's unfortunate that, you know, they were in that kind of a predicament. But one of the things that I also try to let people know, HUD actually has the priority for the funding that HUD has for, you know, the homeless in our area are for what they call the chronic homeless. To be considered chronic homeless, you have to be homeless for 12 consecutive months, or you have to have three separate homeless events in the past 3 years, that your total homelessness has to be 12 months or more. And that's where the priority is given for the funds that are coming from HUD. And that's not a guideline that we have, but that's coming from HUD. So again, you know, if somebody just finds themselves, you know, in a predicament where they're homeless and it's just their first time event, you know, where are they going to turn for the help, because the funding just isn't available because of the HUD regulations.
John, if you have a member of law enforcement saying that a homeless shelter is going to, lead to an increase in crime because different people that are coming to the area, you have to be concerned about that, don't you?
Well, it is a concern, and it's one of the things that you know we're well aware of. But one of the things, in fact, yesterday I just had a nice conversation. I spoke with the sheriff down in Delta County, Ed Oswald. He is fully supportive of the Hope at the End rotating shelter in Delta County, and actually he's actually also a church coordinator for their church to participate with a shelter. There's an example, even though in these other areas, you know, the law enforcement has been, you know, not as supportive of the shelter, you know, but here's, you know, the sheriff down in Delta County that is fully supportive, you know, sees the risks that are there, but yet, you know, supports it and then also participates in, you know, providing the help, you know, through their church to, you know, be one of the host churches down in Delta County.
Well, do you feel, and the rest of the remaining members of your board, feel comfortable moving forward knowing that you don't have the full support of local law enforcement?
At this point, we do, because we're still, you know, wanting to work with the law enforcement. I mean, we're going to be working with them. You know, we're reaching out to them as much as we can. 2 months ago, I had both the chief of Hancock Police and Houghton Police. They were at our meeting when we were talking about, because one of the procedures that you know, all the UP shelters do, and that we will be doing, anybody that comes to stay at the shelter, their information is provided to law enforcement to do wants and warrant checks to make sure that there's not any outstanding wants and warrants for them. And so we're working at trying to finalize, you know, the procedure of how we're going to be doing it. You know, so that we'll already be engaged with, you know, the law enforcement to be able to make sure that we're screening the people that are coming in. The people that come in know that they're having that, you know, screening taking place. And so we're going to be doing everything that we can to be able to you know, alleviate some of the concerns that people have. But then at the same time, you know, doing what we can to try to help them, you know, realize that it may not be, you know, I think as part of it is that the unforeseen is causing more concerns that what may actually happen. And we're hoping that will be, you know, what we actually experience, you know, once we're up and running and they're now having a place where if they do encounter somebody that is homeless, now they know there's a place that they can bring them for shelter.
So much work has been put into this up to this point. I mean, this is an effort that's been going on for years, and you're welcome to talk about that effort. But, you know, you had a board put together, and you were meeting regularly, and then everything seemed to be going smoothly until the last few days, maybe about the last week, when it all kind of blew up. And you specifically were targeted for some criticism in the local paper by members of your own board, at least with comments made by Mr. Jacobs. did that sting? How did you respond to that?
Well, it was hard to take, you know, and that's one of the things that you know, the remaining board members, you know, that are there, you know, that was one of the things that we had talked about, you know, and I have also realized, you know, even before, you know, this took place, when Dr. Jacobs had first brought some of the concerns, you know, as I was responding to the board, you know, on some of his concerns, you know, I realized that, you know, this has been a passion of mine for the last 8 or 9 years. And so, you know, and with my involvement with our local, you know, homeless coalition, also with my involvement, you know, on the state homeless advisory board, I see the need as something that I know that's needed. So, you know, I was saying that, you know, granted, you know, there's times that I know that I'm going to be running faster than they may be comfortable moving. But, you know, for me to be able to realize that, and for them to be able to realize that, to be able to, you know, pull the reins a little bit if I'm going too fast, but at the same time allowing me to kind of be the trailblazer and, you know, moving forward together, you know, that's what, you know, we're really hoping that we're able to do, because of the fact that, you know, there still is that really dramatic need in the community. And this has been something that's been talked about. Like I said, I've been part of the homeless coalition for about eight years, maybe 9 years. And for people that have been part of the coalition for longer, at least for, I know from my conversations with other people, emergency shelter is something that's been discussed as a definite need for at least the last 15 years. And so it's not something that's, you know, something new that is needed, but it's been something that's been really needed for at least the last 15 years. And, you know, to be able to be at this point of, you know, at least seeing things coming together, and actually maybe having a shelter open and serving the needs is something that we're really hoping will actually happen.
One of the things brought up was that the board had not approved, this is what is alleged, is why I'm asking you, that fundraising and promotions would continue. This is to get the shelter open and ready for November 1st. Are you aware of that, or is that accurate?
Well, that was, you know, one of the things that they had brought up. But, you know, the support of the other board members that are still, you know, serving and we're working, you know, to move forward, but let me just kind of preface, part of the reason that they were also really concerned was because we officially aren't a 501c3 recognized by the IRS. And one of the things that was clear in the GoFundMe campaign was the fact that we haven't received our 501c3 status. And so, you know, I tried to make people aware of that. And then even when they brought up the concerns, I actually then went and revised the campaign, you know, the information on the campaign to really clearly state that, you know, we aren't yet recognized by the IRS, so donations, you know, won't be eligible for tax deductions. I did make contact with the people that already donated to let them know that the board, you know, wanted them to be aware and make sure that you know, they realized that they weren't going to be able to get a tax deduction. Every one of them responded back that we didn't want to take the tax deduction, but we just wanted to support, you know, the shelter to be able to provide service to the area. And that's one of the things that we've found, you know, that I found, you know, the people that have been supportive, you know, that the need is there. And, you know, organizations can receive donations even if they don't have the tax status, you know, of being a recognized 501c3 organization, and just being aware of that fact, you know, so that's one of the things that I've been doing is to let people know, but yet there's no reason why we have to not raise money and move forward just because of the fact that we don't have that status.
The last time we talked, there was only one church that had signed on to be a host church. Do you feel that some of this negative light being thrown on the shelter may cause it to be difficult to get enough churches to start this thing by this year?
Well, it is a concern, but yet I know from, you know, conversations, well, and I should take it back. I haven't had any conversations you know, yesterday or today since, you know, all the other things that happened. But, you know, I still feel from, you know, the some of the churches that I've had contact with that are, you know, seriously considering it. I'm hoping that they'll still move forward because, you know, they'll realize that there's still the need. One of the things that you know, we just actually had a new church that had made contact with me. They saw the GoFundMe information and said, hey, what's this all about? And so in conversations with them, they said, hey, our church would be interested. So I've sent them more information. I'll be following up with them sometime early next week after I get back from Lansing. You know, so we've been getting, you know, some additional contact. You know, I'm hoping, you know, and I'm feeling very, you know, somewhat confident that, you know, we will have the 6-day churches. That's been kind of our goal, you know, that will be in the network of host churches to be able to have a 6-day week rotation instead of, you know, only having 3 or 4, and every 3 or 4 weeks the church has to do it. But, you know, we're you know, really looking at trying to find 6-day churches to make it a little bit easier for, you know, a 6-to-8-week rotation before the church, you know, hosts the shelter again.
Your GoFundMe page had a stated goal of $5,000. Where are you standing right now with fundraising?
We're at 980 that has come in with, you know, between the online donations and a donation that came in the mail just the other day. So we're at 980 so far with the campaign.
So kind of in a nutshell, John, the goal is to be ready for November 1st. You met with the board. You talked briefly about that the rest of the board that remains are still on board and moving forward. How do you feel about, you know, these next few months?
Well, I feel confident. You know, there's going to be some reorganization that we'll have to do, you know, on the board to be able to find you know, some additional members to help us. The other thing, you know, at our meeting last night, we also set a tentative date for, because this was something that we've been talking about for the last month, we did set a tentative date for the end of September to be able to have 2 more large community meetings, to be able to have the members of the community as well as, you know, the churches that, you know, that are in the process of considering, you know, hosting. We've invited Marquette, Escanaba, and Iron Mountains coordinators. So they've all agreed to come up. Now, I've sent them last night. I sent them the date we had selected to make sure that it still fits in, you know, their schedule to be able to come up. But they had all, you know, had confirmed to me that they would be more than happy to come up and participate in the 2 meetings. What we're planning on doing is having the first meeting from 1 to 3, and the second meeting from 5:30 to 7:30. As we've been having meetings in the community, there's been 2 different groups of people that can only come during the daytime and can only come during the evening. So we felt that on the one day to be able to try to have the 2 meetings, you know, scheduled. And as soon as I have a confirmation from Marquette, Pescanaba, and Iron Mountain that day will work, you know, then we'll be sure to publicize that date and let people know so that the churches, you know, can plan on, you know, coming and having some of the last questions. Because I've been trying to share, you know, the information that I've received from, you know, my conversations with Doug Russell. You know, he's been a mentor in this process with me. You know, so he shared, you know, all the different things of, you know, how their shelter works and operates. And again, back in April, you know, we had a group of about 15 of us from the Copper Country that actually had gone to Marquette for the afternoon and the evening to be actually be able to see and talk to, you know, some of the staff. So we had a little bit of knowledge. And so that's what I've been trying to share with people in the community. But with the churches that are actually operating the shelter, it'll be there'll be a lot more weight from their being able to say, hey, we haven't had the problems that, you know, people are thinking about as far as, you know, problems within the shelter, theft, and, you know, some of the different things that have been brought up, you know, as some of the questions that people have had.
John, I appreciate you taking time off of your trip here and letting me hold you up a little bit, but, you know, with the, you know, a news story can only be somewhere around 90 seconds long, and this long form interview allows us to be able to address a number of the issues at the same time and give you, you know, gives you a chance to be very clear in your explanation. If somebody has a question that we were not able to address here, what's the best way that they can get that to you?
They can give me a call on my cell phone, 906-281-2042, 906-281-2042, or my email address is johnniemela, johnniemela@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to you know, answer their questions, be able, you know, happy to, you know, meet with a church and be able to, you know, answer more of the questions of our board. You know, we'll be happy to do that as well. So if anybody has any other questions, you know, we're more than happy to be able to answer any questions that people have.
And I referenced your Facebook page, your Hope House Homeless Shelter Facebook page, which of course has more information as well. I'll direct people there as well as for that. John, thanks so much again, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.